Good evening and welcome to the November 17th episode of the Public Works Advisory Board for the City of Morro Bay. Episode, that's new. Please note that all current members are present and we're going to get started. As we go, could we start off with a moment of silence, please? Okay. The next item on the agenda is the acceptance of the agenda. Do we have an offer to accept the agenda?
I move we accept the agenda.
So moved. All those in favor? And rolling ahead with the agenda. I don't have any announcements. Does anybody have any announcements? Anything coming up? Rob, you have anything?
One item. Just want to remind everybody that the Joint Powers Agreement board meeting is tomorrow night, 6 p.m. in Morro Bay, and it'll be at an atypical location for the JPA meeting. It'll be at the Vets Hall, so it'll be right here at the Vets Hall on Surf. So hope to see everybody out there for our JPA meeting tomorrow night. The 18th of November at 6 p.m., Morro Bay Vets Hall.
All right, that's a very, really important meeting going on for the city. Did anybody else have any announcements? No? All right, we have two written communications between Janine Burlingame and the RTA from Edward King. This is considering the last PWABS meeting award of the contract for local transit, and so just please note that those two letters were in our packet. Next, announcements, written communications. We'll open up the public comment period, but I know we have a presentation, but do we have one more comment? Sir, would you like to come up?
Good evening. My name is Barry Brannon from Morro Bay. And I think that this this group is the appropriate group to start the project that needed to be started some time ago in the Dewar Public Works Advisory Committee. As you know, the wastewater treatment plant has been kicked around for quite a while. We finally had the other shoe drop. And I have a copy of a letter of the comments from the California Coastal Commission. And in summary, the California Coastal Commission has stated, and I'm going to read the paragraph because it's fairly incisive. It says, this letter is to written on November the 12th to Rob Leivick, City of Morro Bay. It's public record. It says, given the significant issues raised by the proposed project and the range of issues it raises with its certified local coastal plan and the Coastal Act, including the location of this major new infrastructure project in an extremely hazardous and sensitive area, the reduced wastewater treatment capacity, and the lack of significant water reclamation program, we respectfully request that the project be re-envisioned in terms of alternative siting and design, and that the draft EIR be revised and be recirculated to address their concerns. And in terms of alternative siting and design, including with respect to a more robust identification of project alternatives that can better address the Coastal Act. This was signed by Madeline Cavallari, Coastal Planner, California Coastal Commission. I pointed reading this into the record because I believe that this body would be an appropriate body to participate in the redesign and resiting of the wastewater treatment plant, because the Coastal Commission has said that the draft EIR of the design we're pursuing is dead on arrival. Thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing that to us. Do we have any other public comment before we go to our presentation? No? Okay.
Yes, I'd like to introduce, I'm Jenny Brantley, and I asked the Central Coast Maritime Museum Association to come to our board tonight to present to us what they've been working on. It involves some public land here in Morro Bay, and the vision is to have a museum. Why I'm particularly passionate about this project as the president of the Historical Society of Morro Bay is we're partnering with the Central Coast Maritime Museum Association to see this project come to fruition. One of the main bottlenecks is to have a lease of the land that's being proposed, and that's kind of our campaign right now is to the Historical Society, not Public Works Advisory Board, but the Historical Society in conjunction with the Maritime Museum Association is the Let Us Lease the Land. It's a particular plot of land that is owned by the city, and they're asking for a 50-year lease at $1 a year. And I've invited Larry Newland, the president of their association, to bring us the vision of the project so we could see what is being asked of city council and city staff. So take it away, Larry.
Well, good evening, and thank you, Board Member Brantley. Good evening, Board. I am Larry Newland. I'm the president of the Central Coast Maritime Museum Association, and I've met many of you over the years, and I'm always happy and eager to talk about this project, which I've been part of for since at least the mid-1990s. And I'm going to apologize a little bit right now for my voice. I'm a little under the weather of this nagging cough. Won't go away, so I'll try to enunciate. I'd like to start by just kind of giving an overview of the project, the concept, and how maybe it's evolved a little bit. I don't want to get down into the weeds too much. We've done that in the past. I want to make this brief, and if there's any questions at the end, I'll be happy to take those. The association, Central Coast Maritime Museum Association, CCMMA, is a group that's been around since at least the early 1990s. I came on then, and we've been a nonprofit since about 1994, 95. And early on, we kind of surveyed the landscape to see where a probable location would be for the Maritime Museum. And it became clear right away that the city of Morro Bay would be the likely place. I mean, we looked at San Simeon, we looked at Avila, we looked at, you know, all over. But Morro Bay, with its maritime history, with its foot traffic, it just was the logical place on the Embarcadero. So we looked around, and I've got some overheads I want to be showing, but this first one identifies the current location, which hasn't changed that much. At one point, we had envisioned a much larger project that would sort of straddle city-owned property adjacent to the power plant, what we call the Front Street parking lot, which is parallel to the Embarcadero, but there's a little frontage road that goes in front of those businesses where the kite shop and donut shop is and kind of terminates there. It became clear probably 10 years ago that the negotiations between the city and the power plant company, at that time it was Duke, right after they sold, bought the property from PG&E, that it was becoming too large and too complicated politically and economically. So we kind of retooled, backtracked, and thought of a smaller project that could be included and completely on city-owned property within the confines of property that the city of Morro Bay controls. And so what you're going to see now up on the overhead is the current location, proposed location, and that project footprint is probably accurate to plus or minus 10 feet or 15 feet. It's in the location across the street from the South T Pier, roughly from where the Great American Fish Company is. It's mid-waterfront, so it'll attract people coming from the Rock area as well as from the South Waterfront area. It's currently being used as a parking lot, and this has been the source of some consternation because parking has been an issue in this town as it is in most towns. It's valuable, and it's valuable real estate. And we believe, our organization, and we've campaigned on this for quite a while, that we think there's a higher and better use for that piece of property than the total loss of 7 or 8 or 10 parking places, and that would be a full-time permanent maritime museum. And on the notion of permanence, I would like to, because this is a technical public works committee, there's something that should be noted about this particular design. It is a permanent museum, but we are designing it in such a way that in the future, should it be necessary to relocate the building and the static displays, which are small vessels around the outside of about a 1,500 square foot building. Should it be necessary to relocate those a few hundred feet north, south, east? That shouldn't be very difficult to do. It's simply a matter of using house-moving dollies and trucks to move it out of the way, and, of course, reattaching utilities and so forth. And so in working out the details of this long-term use agreement, the lease, we're perfectly willing to have some language like that included in there, that down the road, should the city need to move us around a little bit, make some adjustments, that's okay. So looking at the site itself, you can see the building, about 1,480 square feet, something along those lines, almost 1,500 square feet. Right up next to the Embarcadero, probably back about 5 to 8 feet from the edge of the traveled way. There are static vessels, static displays, vessels around the outside. The one that's being pointed to right now is the tug Alma. It's about 46 feet long. A little note about the Alma. It was involved with the Montebello incident a couple of weeks after Pearl Harbor. The tanker Montebello was torpedoed and sunk off the coast of Cambria. And of the four lifeboats, the Alma picked up three. So it has a World War II connection, and it's probably eligible for the National Trust for Historic Preservation based on that. And that's something that we're going to be pursuing. We have that in our collection. It will be restored to a visual degree. It will never be put in the water again. It will never be seaworthy again. It'll be put on static display and help tell the story of Morro Bay's connection with World War II at the very beginning of the war. Further to the right of that, there's another vessel. That's a Coast Guard surf boat that we also own in cooperation with the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Coast Guard. It'll be put on display, and it was one of the first of its type of the rollover boats, and it was actually tested here in Morro Bay. It was sort of a prototype of the ones that they have right now. We also have a 1931 Monterey Hull-style fishing boat that was actually built by the same yard in San Francisco that the Alma was built in, so there's a historic connection there. And all of these things serve as mementos and objects of art to kind of articulate the historic maritime traditions of Morro Bay. Now, this is a photo simulation looking more or less north at the power plant. You can see that we're not talking about the Taj Mahal here. This is not a really large building. And in fact, the landscape is pretty much taken up by the power plant behind there, and who knows what the disposition of that will be in future years. But we've tried to be as realistic as we can about what it would look like. And you can see a building there with boats around it. There's a sidewalk along there and some planters. That was the architect's, in this case, idea. Whether or not they look exactly like that is up to debate and design review and so forth. But that's generally about what we're talking about. Again, a little less than 1,500 square feet on the inside with static displays around the outside. And those static displays will be viewable from a viewing deck, if you will, like sort of a wraparound porch where you can look at deck level at the boat or go down below and walk below the waterline level of the vessels. And we also have in our inventory a submarine, homemade submarine that was built as part of the abalone industry in the early 1970s, and that'll be restored and be out there as well. Thematically, there's a lot of things to talk about when you talk about maritime history in Morro Bay, starting with, and this is probably something we'll work with the Historic Society of Morro Bay on, turning Morro Bay's natural estuary into a working harbor. They have a lot of information on that, and I would envision that that would be something that would be tasked out to them, and that would be one of the static displays that people would see, visitors would see. How did Morro Bay become a bay? It used to be called Morro a long time ago. And incidentally, on back to the Alma, when the Alma went out to rescue the crew, it didn't come out of Morro Bay. It went out of Cayucas, because for a long time it operated off of a mooring ball off the Cayucas Pier. It was really post-World War II is when Morro Bay became more of a working harbor. And we're going to tell that story in conjunction with the Morro Bay Historic Society. Other thematic ideas, the fishing industry, the abalone industry, obviously the World War II connection. But beyond that, more kind of global maritime things, education, from how to navigate, how do you find yourself on the open sea. How do you find out where you're at? From looking at stars to modern-day GPS. And if you go to maritime museums around the country or the world, for that matter, you'll see similar types of displays. So there'll be those, but there'll be certain things that'll be static. They won't change. One of them being about the development of Morro Bay by the Army Corps of Engineers. So let's fast forward where we're at right now to make this come to fruition. I've been working on the project for a while. We presented all of this documentation to the city. They've had it for a while, city staff and city leaders. We need a long-term lease. We need about another $300,000 or $350,000 to open our doors. That won't complete the project, but it will be enough to get our doors open and somewhat operational. Enough to be in the back of Sunset Magazine in an ad about Morro Bay. And I bring that up because $350,000 is about what an expensive traffic signal costs on a multi-lane boulevard. So, again, we're not talking about the Taj Mahal or a multi-million dollar facility. It's a lot of money, but relative to what a lot of things cost, public works-wise and infrastructure-wise, it's not that much. We have some of our own funds already, but we need the lease to be a solvent enough entity to go out and get more money, and we think we can do that. Operationally, the museum will be open on weekends around 365, around the year. But there'll be certain weekends we'll be open probably an extra 2 days, and we'll also be open we'll be open for special tours, and we plan to connect and dial into the school tours, the fourth grade curriculums that come here to go look at the missions on the coast, and we'll dial in to that whole thing. We'll be run with docents, just like when we brought the tall ship Endeavor here back in 1999. It was our organization that did that. It was our organization that started bringing the tall ships in. They now do it as a matter of routine, but we were the ones that started that. So for many years, we've tried to develop some credibility with the community, but also show leaders and the community that there is a pent-up demand for cultural amenities. And when the Endeavor came here, it broke all visitation records except for Newport Beach, California, which had more people in this given amount of time, but they drew from 7 million population. San Diego beat us, but they were there for a month. They were here for 8 or 9 days. And Portsmouth, England. They had to stay open until midnight. The Queen showed up. They had to put special lights on it and that sort of thing. But that's where the boat came from originally in Captain Cook's time. The Endeavor was James Cook's boat that he went to Australia with and went to Tahiti with. So this was a replica that was made in Fremantle, Australia. And they put out a worldwide search for ports that wanted to host them. And so we quickly jumped on that. And so they came here. The lines went all the way down the South T-Pier, all the way out around the Great American Fish Company. They ran out of food. They ran out of liquor. They ran out of tape for their cash register. They had to go hire extra people. Such is life when you bring in cultural amenities. That's a good position to be in, I think, when you're business is so good that you're running out of things. But again, we did it to show that there was a demand for cultural amenities in Morro Bay, and we think that our project will help fill that niche. And so we need a lease. It's our intention to have a lease executed, not an MOU, because we're going to use an MOU to kind of get to our lease, but we want a lease to get by June of 2011, and that's our goal right now. That's our short-term goal. So I'm going to leave it at that. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer those.
Yes, thank you again so much, Larry, for coming here and presenting this. I just want to clarify that the $300,000 that is required to get the museum doors open, the construction, is not part of the request. The request is simply for a lease from the city for 50 years for $1 a year for this cultural amenity to be added. But the funding for the museum, the construction of the museum, would come from other sources.
That's true. But in addition to the lease, we have asked for assistance in the trenching for utilities, and we've asked for a waiving of fees, the normal fees that you would charge a for-profit developer. But other than that, we haven't asked for any cash or funds out of pocket on the city. That would be our responsibility to raise those funds. That's true.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question along the same lines. Once the doors do open, Then would you generate revenue that would help? How would that work with your organization? Would that help fund further development? You said at $350,000, you just get the doors open, wouldn't be completed. Would any of that go back to the city, or other than the dollar a year, obviously?
Well,
but how what would you do with the revenue that's generated? I guess that's what
I'm
asking.
Well, revenues generated by the association, the nonprofit that would be managing the museum, mm-hmm. would go back into operating the museum. Most museums don't make enough money off admission to really operate. It's interesting. I just had a conversation not too long ago, both with the Paso Robles Airplane Museum and the Monterey Bay Maritime Museum. In the Paso Robles Airplane Museum, they're really out of the way. They're on Dry Creek Road, kind of out. There's no foot traffic. They charge $10 to go through there. But they say they do okay and with donations, but they're always out looking for grants and everything. The Monterey Bay Maritime Museum said recently that they went to a bank, a small community bank, and they said, would you sponsor us for a month for $3,000 or $4,000? And people could come in for free, and we'll put a big banner up. And they said, sure. Then they put a donation jar out there. They said that the volume was so high because it was free that the amount of money they collected from donations was like 3 or 4 times what they would get from charging admission, even when they lowered the price. So we'll probably adopt a similar model. So we probably will charge next to nothing to get in. And then we'll seek grants. And it will be run by volunteers. The Airplane Museum in Paso Robles is just now hiring their first full-time person. They're this week, they're going to advertise for a position.
Sure.
And I would just, as the president of the Historical Society, just like to add to that. I really see this museum as, in some ways, a gift to the city. Its construction as a gift, and it's not a revenue earner. It's not a moneymaker.
I wasn't suggesting that it needed to be. I was just curious about if you were charging admission and where that money would go, and if it would allow you to further your development of the project. I was hoping that's what you would say, that then you could complete your project.
Oh, we think it'll be much easier to go for grants and so forth when you actually have a physical building. It's very difficult to get donors to take that leap of faith with a group in its infancy when you don't have something material. There have been a lot of grants we've had to pass up. We didn't qualify for them. We think once we have a building and we're open, and though our displays may not be completed on the inside, we think we're going to be in a good position to go after community grants and that sort of thing, and fundraisers.
I found it interesting. I think it's a wonderful idea. I think it's great. I think it's about time we had something like that here, and I don't see how it could help but draw visitors to our area. I was a little bit curious about a portable building that you're talking about. Is it a modular type structure?
No, it's not. When I say it's not really portable, but what makes it different than a typical building, typically when you build a house or a building, there's a foundation and a footing. It's subterranean. You go down 3 feet, and it's 3 feet by a couple of feet wide, and you pour concrete. Then it goes up above ground, and then you put joists across it and put the building on top. This building will probably sit on a rectangular rim, on a skid, that's a good way of putting it. And it will be anchored to the ground with helicoil anchors, which is a system that's been around for a while, and it's used a lot, actually, in the southeast. It's used around swampy, muddy areas where there are problems with the soils to get good enough to get adequate foundations. And the way they work, it almost looks like one of those. You ever seen one of the coils that they use for tying your dog up in the front yard? It's a big coil, except these are large, sometimes 7, 8, 10 feet long, and they're driven into the ground with a hydraulic machine. Some of them are grouted, which means there are little holes in them, and you plug a hose to the top, and you, under pressure, push in concrete. And so it anchors itself to the ground. And on above ground, there's usually a tang or a tab that sticks up, and it anchors to that skid on the inside. And that's simply a matter of engineering. The companies that make those have specifications in a book based on soil type. It's almost cookbook engineering. I work at Caltrans, so we do a lot of, we have a lot of specs for certain types of soils and certain types of road projects. So an engineer looks at that, looks at the specifications, and orders the system, and somebody who's qualified comes and puts them in. And so when you want to move the building, you're not digging out a footing. You're merely disconnecting from those metal helicoil anchors and jacking the building up and putting out some sort of rolling device like house moving dollies and moving it out of the way. And then you can either dig down and cut off the tang above ground or just cut it off flush and pave over it and abandon it in the ground. So it's a nice system. Jim Mall, our architect, has been working with a local engineer on the system, and I've talked to a lot of people who have used them. A lot of contractors are more and more common, but it's nothing space age or out of the box. It's used a lot nationally. So that's what makes it portable.
Mm-hmm.
It's quasi.
And if for some reason the city needed that land again for parking or whatever, you know, some other purpose, would you, part of your agreement be that you would expect them to provide you another site if indeed it had to be moved?
That's true. An alternate site in a reasonable amount of time and a reasonable amount of assistance to move to that site.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And another question I had was the design with having the vessels outside, and you said a viewing deck around it. Would people be able to board the vessels?
No, they would not.
Be observed from below or
that's
deck
true.
Level?
They would not be able to board. We would anticipate having solar-powered motion lights on them at night, so any movement would trigger lights or use LEDs or something low power that would keep them lit for security reasons. And that question has come up, well, how do you keep people from jumping on there? What if you're not around and people climb up there? Well, there's no 100% way of guarding against that. But the project can be designed in a way that, you know, to almost preclude that. Somebody would have to be pretty acrobatic to try it. And, you know, that's just design and engineering issue.
I was thinking more as a participant wanting to go on board and see what the interior was like. But if that's, I know
well,
that would be a whole other project.
You get into a liability section. And we intend to indemnify the city for $1 million. That's part of our, you know, what we've said up front. The Children's Museum in San Luis Obispo indemnifies the city for $2 million there, and that's very interactive with children, and it's open many days a week. So in talking to our insurance broker, who also writes the policy for that museum, he said $1 million should be adequate. It's about $1,500 or $1,600 a year. That was a year ago. We'll see if the prices went up, the premiums. But, you know, probably the only opportunity somebody would have to climb aboard would be if they were part of our organization and were doing some maintenance. But I think that they would be open enough that you and lit enough that you'll be able to see a lot of the inside. I think you'll be able to get a lot of feel about what the vessels are like from looking at them at eye level and down below.
I was in New Zealand a year ago, and they have a large maritime museum there, but outside they have out in front, they had several large sailboats out in front and bottom lit from underneath at night. They were just beautiful and very eye-catching, you know, and it could be a very nice thing to look at.
I think I've seen photographs of that one. The San Diego Maritime Museum now, everybody usually thinks about the Star of India or the other vessels, but on the sidewalk out in front, they have some small vessels on very interesting-looking display cradles. And our situation would be very similar to that. If you look at the static displays there, ours would be very much like that.
Sounds like a great project.
Any more questions? Larry, thank you very much for your presentation.
You.
Very informative.
Thank you. I appreciate
thank you
very
it.
Much.
Thanks. All right. Well, that should be interesting if that comes to fruition. When? Okay, thank
next,
you.
By next June.
We shouldn't put if. If is only the middle word in life. When doesn't fit in there. All right. Our next item is the approval of minutes from October 27th. Did anybody see anything they wanted to change, or do we have a move?
I move they be accepted.
And we have a second. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. We approve the minutes from October 27th. Now, Mr. Leivick's been over here on the wings waiting patiently. He's ready to be grilled about the director's report. Okay, would it is. Okay, does anybody have a question for Rob about the director's report?
I just want to point out that you can see the streets maintenance section is pretty light. In fact, there's nothing in it. I did not receive an update from our maintenance division in time to get that in the package. So I just want to point that out, that although they were working, they didn't have time to get me an update on the streets activities going on. But you probably have noticed the North Main project is well underway. In fact, the paving portion is complete. The overlay was completed last week, and the slurry seal was completed this morning. Opened it back up again to traffic early this afternoon. Now the wait begins for availability of thermoplastic striping, which is in short supply across the nation because of high demand, because of a bunch of aero projects, and a shortage of titanium dioxide, which is one of the components in the color for the thermoplastic paint, the white in the paint. Yeah, exactly. So the white, okay. The white portion is in very short supply. So we're trying to come up with a way to make the street safe until we can get the striping installed. And it'll probably be a combination of temporary tabs, the reflective tabs that'll go down, we'll probably be able to install the BOTS dots, the reflective centerline markers. But I've seen people biking and skateboarding on the smooth surface already. And I'd be happy to answer any further questions.
I was curious when Caltrans was going to start on their portion of that area.
San Jacinto?
I thought they were doing the fencing, the highway between Main and the freeway.
They gave a presentation a couple of years ago to this board about a project, a T mm-hmm. project, transportation enhancement project. Mm-hmm. And that project, I think I mentioned it a few months ago, that project it was terminated by Caltrans.
No, I didn't know that.
And due to the way it's funded, that the enhancement is the operative word there. They could pay for enhancement. The right-of-way fencing is a standard requirement, so they would not pay for replacement fencing. They would compensate for the additional vinyl coating, but you can't vinyl coat existing fencing, and it would have to be new purchased. Caltrans didn't have enough money to fund the project, so they pulled that money and funded the T project on the Estero Bluffs. The parking area is a little bit north of here on the bluffs is where they moved that money to. We didn't have really any say in the matter. It was all their project. Hmm.
It's too bad. It would have been a nice finishing touch.
It would have been.
Yeah.
I have a question about the EIR. Did I understand this fellow to say that basically they're going to start again?
That was a comment letter from the Coastal Commission. Our ER consultant will respond to comments, and that will be presented to the Planning Commission next month. It's a little premature to say how we're going to respond to that. I don't think we're going to start over again, though.
I didn't hear any specifics. If we heard the letter in its entirety, I didn't hear specifics about what it was that they felt needed to be changed so significantly. Of specifics? Oh, okay. Why didn't you read that to us? Just kidding.
Well, it sounds like they're rejecting everything. That they want you, they expect us to start over in a new location.
Where can we get a copy of that?
I'll be glad to give you this, and I think probably available from Mr. Leivick, the letter's written, you know, you can tell you.
Yeah, it'll be issued in our response to comments portion. So if you can wait another week or so, you'll have the letter plus the response to comments, or you can get a letter now.
How would we access that?
You could come into public services, and we can get you a copy of that letter.
And the response?
To comments won't be published till it's made available to the Planning Commission. So early next month is when it's going to Planning Commission. They're the body that acts, makes recommendations to the City Council on the EIR.
So the EIR won't come up for the JPA tomorrow?
No.
All right. Do we have anybody else have any other questions about? I had one on this page 3 of 3 on the bottom, miscellaneous. Sign up for Notify Me on the city's website for notification of council boards and commissions information. Rob, maybe you can explain it for our listening and viewing audience.
Yeah, we have the ability on our website, if you want to receive an email announcing when an agenda is available, when the city newsletter has been published, when minutes have been published, there's a section called Notify Me. You click on that button, sign up with your email address, and you'll get an automatic email as soon as, you know, basically when we drop something into that web folder, it generates an automatic email to everybody on that list that they get notified when agendas are available, minutes, whatever you sign up for. There's quite a large category of things that you can sign up for.
Would this letter we're talking about from the Coastal Commission show up in there if we check the appropriate box?
Something that specific probably mm-hmm. wouldn't, but you would check the box for information on the wastewater treatment plant, and when anything gets published for the wastewater treatment plant, then you would be notified on that. So that's the JPA box that you would check.
So is that letter going to be going into the JPA box? Or not really?
It'll be published in the response to comments document for the final EIR.
Can we just make a request that we get a copy of the letter and the comments when they're ready?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Maybe that's just the easiest way. Thank you. I appreciate
or
it.
Or notify me.
I love, by the way, thank you, Matt, because Notify Me is good. And you just pick the one, but I want to make sure I've picked, I'm not getting mm-hmm. which one I need to pick to get that information.
I don't think any of them were going to be
right.
that specific.
Right,
so.
But that otherwise, Notify Me works really well.
The document that letter is in will be published to the, that letter will be part of a larger document of all the comments that we received on the EIR. I think there was about 20 comment letters that we received on the EIR. So they'll all be published in a response to comments document that's a supplement to the final EIR. So we're obligated to respond to all the comment letters.
It just seems like this. I hear what you're saying, that there's been a lot of comments on the EIR, and that the letter that was presented to us tonight was a letter from the Coastal Commission, which to me seems a little bit separate than simply general comments on the EIR. I mean, the Coastal Commission is a governing body. That don't we have to pass some sort of selection process by the Coastal Commission to get to move forward on any project?
Only through an appeal. If the project is appealed to the Coastal Commission, do they act on it? We have a certified local coastal plan in Morro Bay, so it's in the appeals jurisdiction, so it's not in the original jurisdiction. We issue our own coastal permit here in Morro Bay for those projects. If that project is then appealed to Coastal Commission, which it probably will be, that's been the promise out there from several people. That it will be appealed.
So why did Coastal Commission generate this letter?
This was their comments.
That was their comments.
Okay.
We requested their comments.
I see.
In fact, we extended the comment period so that they could get the comments in and have them published in the final EIR because they couldn't make the comment period deadline.
Got it. Okay. Duly noted. Thank you.
I've got something.
Okay. Oh, would you like to go first? Because I had a question.
Oh, no, I thought you were going to be closing.
Oh, no.
Go ahead.
Rob's on
go
the
ahead.
House. No, go on.
Okay, I guess it's my turn. Okay, on the bottom of page one, there's an acronym paragraph there about the fire station being completed. And I'm impressed because I know in the past I have complained about the acronyms not being broken down, but this does a great job about what FEMA is, FONSI is. And then at the bottom, there's something about a piece of equipment that they need, and the specifications say that it has to be domestically built equipment. And since no one makes it domestically, they're kind of at a standstill. That's how I interpreted this. And the piece of equipment is HVAC, and I was curious what that is.
Heating, ventilation, air conditioning system. Mm. So it's the sort of the lungs of the building. I'll just talk about that a little bit. Much of the fire station is funded through ERA grant, American Recovery. I can't remember the acronym now. Anyway, it's the stimulus money.
Mm-hmm.
As a clause of federal money, typically there's a Buy America clause. We faced it on our North Main Bike Lane project. We were replacing manhole lids, the kind that our wastewater collections section likes, are hinged lids that you don't have to pull up all the way. Well, there's no American company that provides those. They're all made with Chinese steel. They were ineligible for funding through our ERA project. Now, this was a small component of our project, and we just funded it separately through the contractor and were able to buy them outside of our ERA contract. This HVAC system, or the heating and air conditioning system, is a major component of the fire station. It, in fact, it's one of the major green components of the fire station, and it'll probably, recover its cost in, a fairly short time, because it is so energy efficient. It allows for each of the dormitory rooms to be heated and cooled separately from one another. Very efficient. There's no American manufacturer of this system. We've appealed to FEMA to, since there is no American manufacturer, to allow us to purchase this from a foreign vendor. The first level has denied that appeal, so we're moving it up the ladder. This time we're writing the specifications a little bit more generically and not calling out a model or an actual manufacturer. Mm-hmm. For it. So with this more generic spec, we're thinking that they'll approve that, even though it is not available from a U.S. manufacturer. Mm-hmm. It would cause major redesign in the building and a substantial increase in costs of construction because of this HVAC system.
Well, my personal comment is it's too bad there isn't a domestic source for that type of thing. It's not the only fire station being built, I'm sure, across the country. But I guess you have to work with what you have.
And they have allowed this system that's funded with federal monies to be used at military installations. So we're quoting, it's been used before. So we're not setting a precedence for it being used.
A lawsuit against a Los Angeles county. They've won. That's past the appellate level. So that might be something you were talking about, trusting sludge over to there. And I don't think that will be possible.
Yeah, that you provided a written comment, so that will be responded to in writing and with the ERA consultant's analysis of that comment.
Rob, I had a question, two or three questions about water. Can you explain what's going on with the state water shutdown? I know we're in it right now, but maybe we can put it out there for the folks in TV land. And also, coupled with that, talk about the mandatory water conservation measures that we're currently using or trying to get people to use in the city.
Thank you, Matt. Yes, we're currently in the state water shutdown, and we anticipate state water coming back on November 22nd, which is in about five more days. So we'll be off of it. They've given us no indication that it's going to be longer than that, hoping for maybe a day or two shorter. This moderately restricted water conservation is kind of the condition that we're in pretty much year-round. It's really good ideas. Don't leave your hose running when you're washing your car. Use a spring-loaded shutoff on your hose. Don't over-irrigate your landscaping. Really not overly restrictive, because our local water supplies are sufficient with the combination of our brackish water RO system and our the city well fields. Choro Creek hasn't dropped below the 1.4 CFS, so we have the ability to draw water from our Choro Creek well fields and blend that with the brackish water RO to make up the city's water supply.
Is it
with the brackish water? Yes, we mm-hmm. have the more energy efficient brackish water system going. Instead of treating brackish water with our salt water extraction mm-hmm. system, these are lower pressure membranes, use less energy to force the water through. Since there's less salt in brackish water than there is in seawater, it takes less energy to get that out of there.
Isn't this the first state water shutdown period where we've used those?
Yes, yes, it is.
And how are they operating?
They're operating fine. With the PG&E power bump that we had a couple weeks ago, we had some instrumentation issues, and we're running the plant by hand basically right now. It requires a little bit more babysitting that way instead of being on a computer-controlled system, but it is operating, and we've filed a claim with PG&E to try to recover some of that cost
Will
from
it be
them.
Going back on computer-operated then?
As soon as we can. I think there's some parts that need to be replaced because of that that power bump.
Great.
And we will, once the state water shutdown's over in 5 days, we will keep the brackish water treatment online, yes?
We'll probably keep it online for the remaining part of the month because we have it costs us so much to run it for that month that we'll complete out that month and then shut it down for, hopefully the winter months. We'll have some wet weather, I'm hoping for, and lower water usage.
I'd always like to be updated on the bike plan information, and I see here it says next priority after the pavement management plan. So
that's correct. We're kind of a one project at a time operation.
Makes sense to me. Yeah.
here, so we're focused on the our North Main project right now. We have a new associate engineer, Barry Rands. I don't know if he's mm-hmm. been to one of these meetings yet, mm-hmm. but he's heading up that project. As soon as that's done, we might be able to parallel the pavement management plan and the bike plan. We're also still waiting on some comments from SLOCOG. I met with Gaiska, and she was hoping to get me those comments very soon. They want to make sure that we're BTA grant compliant. We've met all the check boxes so that we can get additional bike funding.
So sometime next year, maybe?
Next year,
start on
yes.
That?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think we have to start it. I think it's more of an issue of completing it and then getting those new projects that were recommended by this board and by Planning Commission into the plan, and kind of coming up with we'll probably bring back to you refined ideas for that Quintana Main how we're going to handle that crossing there.
Great.
Yeah, I want to ask about that because we were talking. You were talking about the fence. The fence mm-hmm. project. Mm-hmm. So, are they? Is anyone doing a? I thought it was like a regrading or a retrenching of that Quintana, the San Jacinto area.
Caltrans has a. I can't remember what acronym project they have for it. Too bad Larry's not here. He could probably tell me which project it is. They have a project that they're going to do something with the drainage there, basically kind of tear up that intersection. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure when that is on the project. It was when we met with them on the last time we met on the fence project was probably 6 months ago. It was probably 2 years off before they were looking at doing that project.
All right, anybody have any more questions? All right, we're done with the director's report. Thank you, Rob, for all that interesting stuff. All right, we're on to new business. And we have a consideration to consider the cancellation of our next PWAB meeting December 15th. Now, I guess when we're considering it, my question would be, Rob, knowing that the big thing that Public Works has got going on is the paving of the North Main Street area, and you just mentioned the bike plan and the pavement plan around town, is there any idea, I mean, I don't mind canceling this next meeting, but are we going to be, does that mean in January we're going to be talking about pavement?
We'll be talking about something in January, hopefully pavement. I know we have some water issues that we still want to talk about. Now that we've been online with our computer web-based billing system, I think we still want to bring that. Talk a little bit more in detail about water conservation. And then the collection system repairs on our utility side we still need to do. Unfortunately, it won't be with Michael Randall. He's leaving the city for moving kind of back home. So we'll be looking for a replacement assistant engineer very soon.
I'd like to maybe bring up Barry's suggestion that we become have a little more of a conversation amongst us about what's happening with the wastewater treatment plant, potential siting conversation, reclamation conversation about reclamation of water.
All right, well, Jenny, how about if we...
Not for next month, but
well,
for...
No. How about we... Well, let's finish the new business and for future...
I thought that's what we were on.
No, because I was just looking at our new business. We only have one thing, which is the cancellation of next meeting.
Oh, okay. And I'm so sorry. I thought we were already on
future
agenda.
No, I'm sorry.
Pardon.
I was just...
I will be out of town. On the next meeting.
Okay. Well, let's finish this.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion
Is anybody opposed to canceling our next meeting?
Well, you know, we almost invariably every year have done this.
In December?
I can't remember a December meeting.
What do you think that tells us, Bill? What do you think? Is there some deeper meaning there about PWAB? And
well, either we
meetings?
Do it Me Too or we start a new four.
Okay. So, would anybody... Do we need to make a motion for this?
I'll make a motion that we cancel that meeting.
I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Well, folks, there will be no PWAB meeting December 15th. Our next scheduled meeting will be, I do believe it was January 12th. No, January 19th. That's the third Wednesday, correct? So our next PWAB meeting will be January 19th, 2011. Okay. That finishes off new business. We go to old business. There is none. Now, Jenny, we do have these four things, and that's what Rob, I think, I maybe messed up things by bringing that up. But so we don't know which of those four that's been on the city's plate for a while we'll get in January?
I would shoot for the pavement management plan, or one that's not even on here at all is our stormwater ordinance revisions that we need to get that to both the Public Works Advisory Board and the Planning Commission right at the beginning of the year. We are hoping to get that to council in February. So right now we're going through training on how to write a stormwater ordinance that meets the regional board's requirements. So
that sounds like fun.
It is.
Okay. I, for one, I wouldn't mind seeing the pavement management plan. I know I've been approached on half dozen times from folks around Morro Bay asking, hey, where's my street on the list? So I would love to be able to say something, be able to give them a definitive answer. So those are the official things. Jenny, how would you like to word your concern?
Wastewater treatment plant conversation.
What I might suggest, though, have that conversation amongst the board in January, and then perhaps write a PWAB memo to council, because the JPA is the board that oversees the wastewater treatment plant. You may want to ask their authorization to work on that project.
So you're saying, Rob, we should ask our city council or JPA for permission?
Our city council. This board doesn't report to the JPA. They report to the city council. But it's really not under the purview of this board, the wastewater treatment plant. At this time, it's the JPA, traditionally. I know that staff wouldn't be providing really any information other than the update, the general updates that we do, without authorization from council to do such.
Could we be, I'm not sure, under the purview in terms of public works, since we are a citizen oversight board, could not a member bring an idea about something that concerns public works to this board and then make a recommendation to our city council, which would then in turn take it to the JPA?
Well, the JPA wouldn't authorize this board to do anything. They're made up of the Cayucas, and it would be more our council would direct you, your advisory to council. So our council would direct you on the projects that they desire you to really work on.
So it's not typically our role to initiate a project and then go to council with
yeah.
it.
Well, you could, but you really wouldn't have any staff support to do that because we work at the direction of the city manager, works for city council, so that's where we take our direction from.
Well, but we still could have that conversation and make a recommendation to council, correct?
Yeah, that's what I was suggesting, exactly what I was suggesting.
Okay, so we could speak about this, and then although we're understanding that the tacit, not necessarily not non-help of staff, but we could then go to our council, our Morro Bay City Council, and then say this is what we feel as an advisory.
Yeah, you can have a PWAB memo to council that they would put on their agenda for discussion.
To either regard or disregard.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. So we could have a wastewater treatment conversation.
I think that would be
correct.
A good idea. I've had a chance to visit three wastewater sites, and I came away very impressed with one that I understand isn't submitting anything.
Okay.
It seems like we as a board just should at least know each other's opinions and have a conversation, if not to have a cohesive agreement. But who knows? Maybe we will have a cohesive agreement and a recommendation to council. But at least the conversation will be interesting, I think, and informative.
Okay.
I'd like to hear your thoughts.
So then how would you like to phrase that?
Wastewater treatment plant conversation.
There we go. So for our future agenda item for January, wastewater treatment conversation. No, that's fine.
Sure.
And then through that, if there's either a conversation or some sort of correspondence that we then send to council, and especially with JPA. We'll have one JPA tomorrow, and then
January.
And then we'll have January.
And February.
What's the date in January? Is it?
Oh, December 2, yeah.
So there'll be a few JPAs.
It's the typically the second Thursday of the month, which is in. December 9th, and then January the 13th. Thank you, Matt.
All right. Paper beats computer so far.
It does.
Okay, so wastewater treatment conversation for the January PWAB meeting. And members will bring their concerns or ideas.
I won't assign that to any specific board member. I'll just say a board
sure.
item.
And then from that, if we decide on some sort of correspondence, we can do that. Sure. Okay. So that finishes off future agenda items. And before we adjourn, does anybody have any last-minute things to bring up? Seeing none. Oh,
happy holidays.
Okay. Turkey Day holiday reminder. But, Bill, what did you have to say?
Well, I have a question here. The board is down by the five members by attrition, but has anything been changed? Are we still supposed to be seven members? Are we going to be seven after the?
You're still seven members. The city council just hasn't recruited to. I think there's a couple vacancies on Parks and Rec Board. They're waiting for the new council before they recruit for.
Nothing changed.
No, nothing has changed.
So it's really supposed to be seven people.
Yes.
Yeah. Which will come up in February.
Yes. Or maybe I don't know when council is going to.
Well, it's always in February. We have the new. Then we have the election of officers.
And
I won't be here.
You're not going to be here in January?
My term is up. January will be the end.
Oh, all right.
After 22 years.
We don't know if we want to let you go, Bill. All right. Please note, Morrow Bay, that we will be. There are some vacancies on the Public Works Advisory Board, and if you are interested, come on down. I do believe. Where are the applications, Rob?
At the City Clerk's office at 595 Harbor Street on the corner of Harbor and Shasta. Council hasn't set a date for when they're recruiting for those vacancies, but I still think you can get an application down there. Talk to Bridget Kessling, the city clerk, for an application.
January traditionally when vacancies are filled?
I believe so.
And keep in mind, Morrow Bay, Mr. Olson has served the community for 20-some-odd years, and we would not like to see him go, so you can write us your letters convincing him to stay.
I'll second that motion.
And with that,
is
this your last meeting, Bill?
January will be.
Okay.
Good. Okay.
All right. So please note, Morrow Bay, our next meeting is January 19th, and that's the adjournment for this meeting. Thank you, and we'll see you in January.
Choices.
Just check JPA meeting announcement.
Okay.
Stick around the house a little.